Well, we thank you for your advocacy of your time. Next case for argument, United States versus Booker. Mr. Kelly or Ms. Kelly?
May it please the court, my name is Chris Kelly. I represent Freddie Booker in this appeal from his judgment of conviction and from the 30-year sentence that was imposed upon him. In our initial brief, we raised two issues that attacked his conviction and his sentence. We asked for and received permission to file a supplemental brief addressing the impact of Blakely, and I expect you'll be hearing that a lot in the next few days. The initial issues, we think, are adequately briefed. I do want to focus the majority of my time today on the arguments that are raised by the government in opposition to our challenge in light of Blakely. I think it's important to note first the issues that the government did not raise in its brief. It did not raise any question of waiver or forfeiture of this argument. It does not argue that it should be reviewed only for plain error. It does not argue harmless error. This court has ordinarily held that the government may not benefit from defenses it has not raised, and since it has not raised those defenses in this case, although I anticipated that it might and addressed them in my brief, I would not intend to talk about them today unless asked. The government does raise, in essence, two arguments.
Have you seen the government's letter dated July 4, which raises plain error and harmless error doctrines?
I received a copy of that this morning in which the government cites authority with regard to plain error but harmless error, but again, it has not made that argument. It has simply cited authority for propositions that were not advanced in its original brief. The brief that the government filed does make essentially two arguments. The first is that this court is bound by a Supreme Court precedent, which of course is true, but there is no Supreme Court precedent that...
Let's discuss Edwards.
Sure.
What do you say about Edwards? The Sixth Amendment issue was raised in Edwards and rejected.
Well, I don't read Edwards that way. I read Edwards as raising an issue about what was the import of the jury not being asked to distinguish whether there was powder cocaine or
that's the Sixth Amendment argument. The question was not put to the jury, but was resolved by the judge. And the Supreme Court twice says that the defendants are raising a constitutional argument. We happen to know it was the Sixth Amendment argument because it was on review from the Seventh Circuit, where the Sixth Amendment argument was raised and rejected, and it's rejected again by the Supreme Court.
I certainly don't see language in Edwards that expressly rejects the Sixth Amendment argument. What I
The Supreme Court twice says it's rejecting a constitutional argument at page 514 and page 515.
Well, what I read the Supreme Court to be saying is that the argument doesn't matter because the guidelines
are being rejected
conduct.
Because as long as the defendant doesn't receive a sentence exceeding the statutory maximum, there can't be a constitutional problem. Well, here we are. Edwards was basically the setup case for Apprendi. Makes the statutory maximum the keystone. And Edwards didn't receive a sentence exceeding the statutory maximum in the same sense that your client didn't. That is, it was within the maximum set by Congress. And what Edwards seems to be saying is that as long as the sentence is within the statutory maximum, there's no constitutional problem under the Sixth Amendment with the guidelines. Now, why isn't that conclusive on us?
What I see Edwards as saying is that the guidelines leave it to a judge to determine relevant conduct, and because regardless of what the jury found in the trial, the judge was entitled to look at other things in order to determine relevant conduct, it didn't matter. I don't see the Supreme Court saying that... or addressing
that's my question.
A judge must find those facts or whether a jury must find those facts that govern relevant conduct. And
was the claim in Edwards. The jury had not found a critical fact pertinent to relevant conduct, that is, what kind of drug and what quantity. Those findings were made by the judge only. And the Supreme Court rejects a constitutional challenge to that. Now, that's the same
that may
constitutional
have been
challenge you're making now.
That may have been an argument advanced by the defense, but it is certainly not the holding of the case. The case itself does not say we are considering and rejecting a Sixth Amendment argument which suggests that we can only base a
I'll grant you it doesn't use the phrase Sixth Amendment. It says, however, that they're rejecting a constitutional argument.
I think what the Supreme Court did was duck the argument in Edwards. And, you know, it's not unheard of for
as
judges or courts to duck arguments.
You can't duck it. It was made. They said it's no good provided the sentence is under the statutory maximum.
They said...
That's my question for you. How is your claim any different from Edwards's, given that your client's sentence is
I see
the
them as saying that the defense is not raising an issue in that case that goes to relevant conduct or the ability of a judge to find relevant conduct based on facts found by the judge.
That was the only issue in Edwards. That was the absolutely
and
only issue in Edwards.
And that's why I think they ducked it, because they decided
no,
to take essentially a interpretation
they
of the guidelines.
They didn't dismiss as improvidently granted. They affirmed.
They may have done that, but they did not address specifically the Sixth Amendment challenge that they did address in Blakely. In Blakely, they announced a rule of constitutional law, which the government now asks this court to ignore. And I am suggesting this court cannot ignore rules of constitutional law that are announced by the United States Supreme Court. And in Blakely, the court said that a judge may only impose the maximum sentence that the law authorizes on the basis of facts found by a jury with no additional fact finding by the judge. That is now the law of the United States. And if that law is applied to Mr. Booker's case, as it
let me try
be,
once more.
Sure.
If that is the correct argument, I mean, if that is correct, could Edwards have been affirmed?
That
if you're right, it seems to me, the Supreme Court was required to reverse in Edwards.
If
that's the sense in which you're asking us to say that Blakely overruled Edwards. Now, maybe it did, right? The justices are going to have to say that, but we're really talking about at what level the decision is made. They tell us that we can't assume the overruling of any of their decisions. So it's a question about whether this decision has to be made at their level rather than ours.
I don't believe the defense in Edwards raised the argument that only a jury can determine the facts that go to relevant conduct.
That was the only argument made in Edwards.
That's certainly not what Edwards says. What we know is that there is now a rule of constitutional law, that Blakely announces that rule of constitutional law. I don't think that that rule of constitutional law is inconsistent with Edwards. If it were, you would think that the Supreme Court in Blakely would have said, by the way, we are now overruling Edwards because we must do that in order to announce this new rule of constitutional law.
One would think not. That's why footnote 9 of Blakely says, questions about the guidelines are being reserved for future decision.
True, but the Supreme Court also announced a rule about who has to determine facts that govern a sentence.
No, I understand your argument that you think Blakely logically has this consequence, but they certainly did not decide a guideline, a federal sentencing guidelines issue in Blakely. They went out of their way to reserve it. So we just need to figure out what happens as a result of that.
Well, I think what happens, since the Supreme Court did not say in Blakely that Edwards announced a governing rule of law, which you would think it would if it did. And since Edwards does not purport to say on the face of the decision that the Sixth Amendment does not require facts to be found by a jury.
But the other alternative is to say that they're serious when they say the Sixth Amendment requires facts pertinent to the statutory maximum to be submitted to juries. The guidelines in Washington were statutes. The federal sentencing guidelines are not statutes. And one must always consider the possibility that when the Supreme Court talks about statutory maximum, it actually means what it says, that it has something to do with statutes.
It would seem that way, except that Justice Scalia, in writing the majority opinion, redefined the phrase statutory maximum. Essentially, although he didn't use these words, he said that the phrase statutory maximum is a misnomer. A statutory maximum is the maximum that the judge can impose without finding facts that were not found by the jury.
Yeah.
That's the court's definition of statutory maximum.
Exactly.
It has nothing to do with statutes.
And then how are the guidelines problematic under that definition?
The guidelines are binding legislative rules that a court is required to follow.
Subject to departure, right? What fact has to be found is indispensable under the guidelines setup to give the statutory maximum sentence? What is the sine qua non to give the statutory maximum?
Under the guidelines?
Yeah.
The elements of the crime and drug quantity?
No.
In this case?
Why is it the sine qua non? I mean, after Kuhn, the judge can say, I've got good reasons for departure, and here they are. There is no one thing the judge has to find in order to give the statutory maximum.
Well, after the PROTECT Act, I'm not sure that Kuhn is good law anymore, but...
PROTECT Act changes the standard of review, not the substance.
Again,
says we make the decision.
The legislature has, and the guidelines purport to limit the discretion of judges, but that doesn't change the rule of constitutional law that is announced in Blakely.
But if you think the rule in Blakely is that any sine qua non has to be found by the jury, that leaves the question, under the guidelines, are there any sine qua nons?
Under the guidelines, any fact that would increase the sentence that the judge is authorized to impose is a sine qua non, in the sense that the court is using that phrase. I see my light
okay.
is on. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Kelly. Ms. Altman? Or?
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Elizabeth Altman, and I represent the United States in this case. Also representing the United States today is Elizabeth Olson from the Department of Justice. I will be addressing the first issue, which is whether or not the district court abused its discretion in limiting the cross-examination of Beloit police officer Mark Smith.
Was not extensively argued by your adversary.
It was not, and if this court
mentioned.
Does not have any questions, I am happy to rest on the brief and cede my time to Ms. Olson to argue the Blakely issue.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court, Elizabeth Olson on behalf of the United States. I'd like to start with just a one-minute overview to lay out the government's position with respect to Blakely's application to the federal sentencing guidelines, and then circle back and discuss in more detail the issues and how they apply in this case. The government's position has three components. First, we believe that because the Supreme Court did not itself apply Blakely to the federal guidelines, and because it has not overruled any of its prior decisions upholding...
What do you mean, any of its prior decisions? What prior decisions...
Edwards is the only candidate, so...
Your Honor, I think Edwards is certainly on point in this case. I think the other case that's directly on point is Watts. In Watts, the Supreme Court held that a judge could impose enhancements based on conduct, even though that conduct was the subject of an acquittal in a jury verdict. In that case, there was a drug charge.
Was a Sixth Amendment argument made in Watts, or only a Fifth Amendment argument?
It was styled as a due process argument, but the only reason that it wasn't a Sixth Amendment issue is because the defendant did get his jury trial and he won, right? I mean, if he hadn't been given that opportunity,
but was a Sixth Amendment argument raised in Watts? That's my question.
A Sixth Amendment argument was not raised in Watts. Because the jury did return a verdict of acquittal on the point.
No, it's not because the jury didn't return the verdict. One would think that that would be the basis of the Sixth Amendment argument, had one wanted to make one. But
yes, and after the fact, I mean, it was...
But
it
you
was,
tell me one wasn't
right,
made.
Right. It was styled as a due process argument afterwards, because the argument is in Watts is that the sentence contravened the jury verdict. Rather than that the defendant was deprived of the jury verdict, which was essentially the argument in Edwards. In any event, because these cases have not been overturned and because the Supreme...
Well, wait, the cases. We're down to Edwards now. What's curious about Edwards, Justice Breyer didn't cite Edwards, did he, in his dissent? No, he's the author of Edwards?
No, Your Honor.
Why didn't he say, you know, you're overruling Edwards, you're overruling my case?
I don't know why he didn't do that. Did the dissenters
cite Edwards?
No, Your Honor. I believe Justice O'Connor cited
Edwards.
Well,
no, Edwards is not cited by anyone in Blakely.
Yeah.
But isn't that odd? I mean, because the Supreme Court, in this, the footnote about the guidelines not being before the court, it didn't say, well, you know, we're not reexamining Edwards or something like that. It just treats it as an open question, doesn't it?
Although, oddly, Apprendi cited Edwards
exactly. And
said, we are not reviewing the guidelines in light of Edwards.
And exactly. What the court said in Apprendi is, we're not saying anything about the federal guidelines except what we've already said.
Well, one thing to say, we're not... saying, but the question is whether you read Edwards to mean that the Supreme Court has rejected this challenge to the Sixth Amendment challenge to the guidelines. Or
I believe that by citing Edwards in Apprendi, the Supreme Court was saying...
Oh, bleak. I mean, really.
I believe that the court was saying that, as every circuit has held, so long as the guideline sentence imposed is within the statutory maximum...
Usually the Supreme... Well, go ahead.
In any event, unless and until the Supreme Court says otherwise, we believe that the lower courts are obligated to apply.
But only by virtue of Edwards, right?
Well,
no, they're arguing Watts as well.
We're arguing Watts as well.
Yes, I know.
But if you reject that, then Edwards.
If we reject Edwards, then we're not overruling.
Well. The second point of the government's argument, and we don't concede that. We do think that
the
Supreme Court...
Why did the Supreme Court mention the Sixth Amendment in the Edwards case?
I would argue for the same reason that they didn't mention it in Watts. What Justice Breyer said in Edwards is, even assuming arguendo, that the jury's verdict was cocaine only, because there was a question with the jury instruction, since it was cocaine or crack, maybe the jury meant only cocaine. And so, and Breyer said, but even assuming that that's true, it doesn't matter, because the application of enhancements under the guidelines does not depend on a jury verdict, which is the same thing that they said in Watts.
Well, that's certainly true about the guidelines, but does that mean he's ruling on its constitutionality under the Sixth Amendment?
I believe that it does, in that the due process...
The Supreme Court justices usually cite, you know, everything in sight. So it's a little odd to discuss a constitutional issue without mentioning the constitutional provision.
I think our argument is that in both Watts and Edwards, the due process argument after a jury trial is the other side of the coin of the Sixth Amendment argument where a jury trial is denied.
What do you mean, other side of the coin?
Well, the issue in Watts was...
Let's forget Watts. Let's focus on Edwards.
The issue in Edwards was whether or not an enhancement could be imposed.
But see, it's the could that's ambiguous. Certainly under the guideline, as I read the opinion, it may be inadequately, it's about what the guidelines permit rather than what the Sixth Amendment permits.
Yes, although Justice Breyer says in the opinion that the defendant, or that the petitioner, virtually conceded the sentencing question and moved on to making this constitutional claim. And the constitutional claim was that the judge was required to assume that because of the jury instruction that the jury had found only cocaine, and that had constitutional significance. And Justice Breyer said, well, if the sentence imposed had been above the statutory maximum for cocaine only, then perhaps the constitutional claim would have some merit. But so long as the sentence imposed is within the statutory range, which can fairly be said to be contained in the jury verdict, which, even assuming that it's cocaine only, the constitutional issue has no merit. If I could just quickly proceed to the government's second point, we believe that until the Supreme Court says otherwise, Blakely does not apply to the federal guidelines. But we do want to say that in the event that lower courts disagree with that position and hold that sentencing under the federal guidelines must comport with Blakely's procedural requirements, then the question is whether that's possible. And in some cases, it will be.
Whether it's what?
Whether it's possible to sentence someone under the federal guidelines in a way that comports with Blakely. And in some cases, that will be possible where, for example, the sentencing judge determines that there are no applicable guideline provisions that would call for enhancements based on facts beyond those either admitted by the defendant or established in the jury verdict. And there are other cases, if the defendant waives his right to be sentenced under Blakely or if on appeal any Blakely error doesn't...
What if the whole federal sentencing guideline scheme is found to be unconstitutional?
And that's the third possibility, Your Honor. That's the government's third point. If this court holds, or if any circuit court or district court concludes that that sentencing under the federal guidelines must comport with Blakely, but the sentencing judge finds that there are, in fact, applicable sentencing provisions, guidelines provisions, that would call for enhancements based on facts beyond those either established in the jury verdict or admitted by the defendant, then the government's position is that the guidelines as a whole may not be constitutionally applied. We believe that any attempt to overlay...
Well, presumably the judge could always treat the guidelines as recommendations, couldn't he? The guidelines aren't going to be held unconstitutional. The question is whether the guidelines can require judges to impose sentences in particular cases.
Exactly, Your Honor. And in fact, even if the guidelines as a whole cannot constitutionally be applied, the result, we believe, would be that the judge would exercise traditional judicial discretion to impose a sentence. And in that case, it would be the government's position in every case to urge the sentencing judge to draw from the guidelines and to impose a sentence that would comport with the sentence available under the guidelines.
You wouldn't go back to the system as before the guidelines were implemented. That is where the judge had virtual total discretion within the statutory maximum and minimum.
If the guidelines cannot constitutionally be applied, then the judge's discretion would be pre-guidelines discretion. But we believe that the Sentencing Commission, over almost 20 years now of modification and tinkering and experimentation, has in fact come up with a very valuable method of taking the factors that judges have traditionally used in sentencing and determining how those should properly be weighed so that the result is in fact a sentence that is fair and appropriate.
Has the nature of the commission changed in the sense that there's no longer a majority of judges on the commission?
I don't know the answer to that question. I don't think so. I think the key question is the key question that the Supreme Court will have to grapple with is whether the guidelines are laws or whether they are procedural rules, whether they are enough like statutes that they're comparable to the sentencing statute that they struck down in Blakely. And those are questions that I think are more relevant.
Are you suggesting Blakely is distinguishable because that was a statute and these are guidelines?
I believe that it could very well be.
That would be kind of odd, wouldn't it? That would say that the Congress could get around the Sixth Amendment by delegation to an administrative agency, so that regulations would have more binding effect on judges than a statute. It's paradoxical, doesn't it?
Except if you look at what the intent of the guidelines is. Congress's intent in establishing the guidelines was not to establish every different category of establishing new crimes with new elements for each and every enhancement. What they were doing was...
They told the Sentencing Commission to do that.
No, I don't believe so, Your Honor. I think that the intention was to take within the statutory maximum established for the offense of conviction, as established by Congress in the U.S. Code, and standardize sentencing, try to bring some order to individual judges taking all of the factors that they'd always taken into consideration in determining where within the statutory range to impose a sentence, and come up with some method to make those.
But wasn't that what Washington was trying to do in the Blakely case?
Well, it was, except that Washington. No, actually, I don't think that that's what it was doing. I think that because the sentencing statutes in the state of Washington are offense-specific, right? I mean, the Washington statute said second-degree kidnapping with a gun and this criminal history imposes a maximum sentence of 53 months. And then it said, but if the court finds, for example, that the defendant acted with deliberate cruelty, go ahead and go above that. I think that's very different from what the guidelines are intended to do, which is to look within the statutory range established by Congress and then take into consideration all of the factors, vulnerability of the victim, amount of loss, amount of drugs. There are just literally hundreds. It's a 491-page book, the guidelines manual. And the idea was to look at all of the kinds of things that judges have always taken into consideration and bring some order and standardization to that rather than to set statutory maximums for each and every enhancement and rule.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Olson. Mr. Kelly, your time expired, but you can have a minute if you have anything of note you want to discuss.
It's our position that Blakely doesn't require the sentencing guidelines to be found unconstitutional in their entirety. It merely requires that any fact which needs to be found in order to increase a sentence needs to be found by a jury or admitted by the defendant during a plea.
Your client got 360 months, is that correct?
That's correct.
Was that the statutory maximum, or did he get
No, life was the statutory maximum for him.
But are you sure he'd like to take his chances with a sentencing that was not cabined by the guidelines?
Well, the guideline range he had was 30 to life, and the judge gave him 30. I guess we could go back, and maybe next time the judge will give him life, but I don't know why he would. So I don't think he's taking much of a chance. He was facing the possibility of a life sentence before. If we win here, he's still facing the possibility of a life sentence.
Are you saying that life was within the guidelines range for the judge?
Yes.
I see. Oh, okay. Well,
the range was 30 years to life.
So he decided not. He could have, under the guidelines, decided not to.
He could have, yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Kelly. So you were appointed, were you not?
Yes, I was.
Yeah, well, we thank you for your vigorous efforts.
You're welcome, Your Honor.